turn to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's the big day we've been talking about leading up to whenever Kamala Harris would sit down and have a discussion with a reporter where she could answer questions and provide some more context as to what Kamala Harris would do should she become the president of the United States. We'll see how Dana Bash directs this interview. Listen to Miranda Devine.
You know, I don't know how someone who wants to be commander in chief is going to handle really difficult decisions that a president has to make when she's agonized, we hear, for days over just how to do this interview and who to give it to.
I think that the Tim Walz presence, I'm trying to think of a scenario where Tim Walz is sitting next to her at this interview, and at the end they go, I think that was a smart move. I think that was a good call for Kamala to have him be there. The only way that I can think of it being framed is that he either is going to sit there and be quiet and let her speak, and then it's like, why are you there? Or he's going to speak for her. Why is it that she can't sit down and do it herself? And, you know, some people might say she can. They just prefer to do this with Tim Walz. This is what happens. People suspect these things when you don't go to talk to the media. When it's like, this is the interview. When people say, are you going to watch the interview Kamala Harris did? Everybody knows which one you're talking about because there's just one.
Yeah, it feels a lot like Joe Biden sitting down in almost every interview with Jill Biden. There's not really a reason for her to be there other than to sort of frame him up,
keep him on. Like the Stephanopoulos one. He did other ones where he sat down and they were a mess. And, you know, is it worse for a female to sit there and help a man through an interview than for it's more socially acceptable for a man to sit there and help a female?
I don't know. It's such a weird world because environment. Because as much as we just got done talking about, look, Joe Biden is just not capable, over and over and over, the media is trying to tell you not to believe your lying eyes. There's a supercut out there right before the debate of people talking, and even after the debate, people talking about on the left in media and in politics, sharp as a tack. He's so sharp, you wouldn't believe it. Joe Biden's fine.
Kamala Harris was saying that.
Yes.
The woman who wants you to trust her with the keys to the kingdom was just telling you that Joe Biden was fine. And I mean, we're 39 days after her becoming the nominee, and we're finally going to get a sit down interview with her. And like we said before, we all said collectively here, after the CNN debate with Donald Trump and Joe Biden, you had to give credit where credit was due. Jake Tapper, Dana Bash did a good job on that, and it shocked everybody. Basically, what ended up being the news story out of that debate was the performance of the two candidates. CNN moderators didn't get in the way. Donald Trump, amazingly, didn't get in the way, and it took Joe Biden out of the race.
What's amazing is Joe Biden was that far gone, and he was still doing more interviews than Kamala Harris is now.
Yeah, great point. Tyrus, let's talk to Tyrus about this.
You're becoming like my most stable relationship.
Enough said.
He's a regular on Gutfeld, Fox News contributor, and he is a host of Maintaining with Tyrus on Outkick. Check out his latest book, Enough Said. Tyrus, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
When you find out that Kamala Harris is going to sit down for an interview and you're like, okay, finally, and then you find out Tim Walz is going to be there, does that weird you out like it weirds a lot of folks out?
No. And it's not sitting down with the interview. It'll be rehearsed, scripted, you know, they'll do fake lies. We just saw that when they, what was it, tacos with pepper. She's a social media candidate. She's a DEI candidate, and she's a woke candidate. So their playground is social media, and she's had the media in her back pocket her entire, during this entire administration. So that's not going to change. They're not going to ask her real questions. The fact that she's not answering shows that she doesn't need it. They don't feel the need it. She's not concerned with basically half the country at all. She's got her. She thinks she has more people that won't vote for Trump. And so this is what they're going to do. It'll be a softball interview until she does interviews with Fox or Newsmax or other agencies, or, you know, she didn't like 60 Minutes because the format, you know. She's following, the biggest concern is, obviously, you're running for the biggest job in the world, and you can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And you can't meet the press every day in every city or every stump town you go to. I mean, back in the day, they used to stand in the back of trains and do interviews, and the travel press would travel with them and do interviews, and, you know, because they're trying to sell themselves to the American people. And she's already bought and paid for, so there's no reason in her mind to do anything. So I don't even think I'm going to watch it, to be honest with you.
Really?
It's going to be the same. It's going to be much of the same. There's nothing that's going to change my vote based off what I've seen for the last 3.5 years, and the fact that most of the policies that hurt us the most, she was the deciding vote on, and or the last person in the room. You can't claim to be the last person in the room in Afghanistan, and then when it turns out being a hot mess, pretending like you weren't there at all. So that's the type of interview that it's going to be. You know, they're just going to talk about how evil Trump is and how excited they are, and, you know, with their new catchphrase, joy, which I pointed out on Gutfeld. If you Google where that came from, it's pretty ironic.
You know, Tyrus, I think about everything that they've allowed to get through to the American people. As you said, it's very highly produced. This interview likely will be more of the same. I will watch it, but reluctantly so. I think that the celebrity endorsement really got watered down in COVID when everybody became, you know, like a celebrity, and they're very, I'm in my normal kitchen making a sandwich, and like everybody wanted to share everything with everybody all the time. People got a little oversaturated with that. And I don't feel like the celebrity endorsement has really resurged the way it has in the past. And there are a lot of high profile people on the left. We certainly saw it at the DNC, billionaire people coming out and saying Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris. And they keep saying that they want to see change happen. Is that just something? Is that just a line that they're reading that they think the American people are going to buy into, or do they think it's going to get changed even further to the left?
No, I think they're just relying on what worked for Barack Obama. They're using the words that were similar, because Biden's whole thing was because he was a part of the Obama administration. He was the VP. He got the Obama rub during the pandemic. So they're trying to capitalize on that and continue that. So we're going to see more things from the campaigns that work, because there's nothing original coming out of the Kamala Harris Waltz ticket. It's all recycled, whether they take stuff from Trump, Obama. The only one that won't take stuff from is Biden, even though, according to her, she was his right-hand man. And we know, due to his mental issues and his aging, that she was making a lot of those decisions. So if this administration is more reflective of her than it is of Biden, if you look at their two track records, Biden was, I would say, was definitely a moderate. And she has been so far left, you know, so she's going to go even more than Bernie Sanders once she gets in. But again, this is how it works. She's going to tell the people that anything they want to hear is basically Trump's evil. I'm not. So vote for me.
Yeah.
And if that's your campaign and that's your whole point, then I guess there's no reason to talk about it. So again, I'll have to watch it for work, but I'm not expecting anything other than what we have seen. And again, CNN doesn't want to bite the hand that feeds them, so they won't ask her anything tough.
Tyrus, President Biden has been filmed days upon days on vacation at the beach. There are reports that, you know, he may not be doing the greatest either. What do you make of the president's situation right now? And do you believe, I've heard people in his, in his administration say, you know, there are no vacation days for the president. The presidency goes with him wherever he goes. But it's pretty hard to believe when you see him on the beach day after day, taking in some waves and some sun.
I don't think he's been president for at least 2 years, to be honest with you. I don't think we saw the debate. Let's not. That was him at his best. And we know how that went. If he's not reading from a teleprompter and on all kinds of, I don't know, we'll call them 5-hour energy drinks. He's not making decisions. He's not. And that's why we're seeing even Ukraine with the Russians, they want to use ballistic missiles now, which will pretty much drag us into a war. We're seeing Iran, Hezbollah, and all the other Hamas still continuing with reckless abandon and little of the fear from the United States. So, he hasn't been president for a while. And it's obvious. And sending him on vacations and stuff, he's basically just going to ride it out. I guess he started this presidency in the basement, and he'll finish it in the basement.
We're speaking with Tyrus. He's a regular on Gutfeld, Fox News contributor as well. Encourage you to check out his book, Nuff Said, which is available right now. It's a great read. You should definitely pick it up and learn more about Tyrus. You know, we've been talking on the air a little bit recently. There's some stories out of the Surgeon General talking about how parenting is becoming extra stressful on people and burdensome. And I know you're a parent, and I know that you are very active in your kiddos' lives. And I'm wondering, when you hear about the stress that goes on an individual when they're a parent, we were all kind of raised in this time where you didn't really talk about feelings and emotions. You knew they existed, but you didn't need to, like, publicly have a conversation about it. And then we've moved all the way over to where we are right now, where it's like all you talk about. You can run an entire presidential campaign based on feelings. We're watching that happen right now. From a parenting standpoint, the stress that goes on trying to be at all the places, to do the right things, to make the tough decisions, to make the bills, do you think the parents are more stressed out in 2024 America now than they have been in the past?
No, I think they're more distracted. I think parents have a lot of crutches, and to be completely frank, a lot of selfish parents out there who put themselves before their kids. Again, I just remember growing up, we had a bedtime for a reason, because before that, my mom had absolutely nothing going on but making sure her kids were where they needed to be and being taken care of. Sacrifices, you know. When you spend more time on social media than you do doing your kids' homework and stuff, that's an issue. You know, parents, you need to, if you're built, again, it's not a perfect science, and I'm speaking from a guy who's made a ton of mistakes, but I do believe in not making the same mistake twice and learning from them. But the biggest thing I noticed is that you might not have time to hang out with the buddies on the weekend. You might not have time to go on mommy, daddy things or whatever. You might have to eat crow and work with your ex-wife or your ex-husband and not make it about still being mad the relationship didn't work out. I mean, there's a lot of things as parents we need to do better. Not waiting until there's a problem at school to know what's going on at school.
Yeah.
So again, I think there's just a lot of distractions, and we're living in a time now where being a victim is cool. Where being a victim is like fashionable. So, you know, it's not their fault. It's the system. You know, oh, it's the internet is ruining my kid. Well, how is he getting on? You know? So you buy, instead of pacifiers, you buy tablets now, and then you don't know your kid eventually because he's being raised by what he's seeing on those tablets. So, no, I just think that there's more excuses out there for parents, and there's more distractions, and you have to make sacrifices, and just like our parents did. And their parents did, and we have to get back to core values with our children. And I think those who are doing it will reap the benefits, and those they want are going to have to deal with a lot of issues that you should have taken on in the beginning. And medicating them and putting them on an iPad is not the answer.
You mentioned acknowledging that you haven't been a perfect parent this entire time. And I think that when people hear you talking about tablets and electronics, I completely hear that as a parent, four kids myself. And I think to myself, maybe, you know, my 3-year-old has gotten access to technology sooner than I allowed my now 14-year-old. As time moves on, you kind of loosen a little bit of things around the edges. But do you feel like if you're a parent who's like, they all have phones, they have their tablets, I can't take those away from them. Do you feel like you can go cold turkey and reset the entire table if you know it?
All up this summer, didn't think anything about it. It's summertime, we got a big yard, go play. And they were upset. Well, they were used to it because it's consistent. The last thing you have time to do is play on your tablet. So they're in activities, they got homework, they have chores, they're family time, family movie night, you know, things like that. We sit at the dinner table together. So there's a lot of, there's not a lot of time for, you know, sitting on your phone while you eat dinner. That's outrageous. That's when you get to know, how was your day? What's going on with your stuff? You know, and I know, and you know, a lot of times your kids, as they get older, their answers get shorter. Good. Okay. You got to follow. I know it's hard, but follow up questions do matter. I know we don't see them in the media anymore, but they matter at home. But taking them away, yeah. And it's funny because then you don't have time to be on yours.
Yeah.
You have to go outside and watching them. And, you know, sitting on your phone or binge watching a Netflix series instead of being outside with your kids or spending time with your kids or watching your kids, sometimes it's just being present in the room. You know, your kids shouldn't, if your kids have to hide being on social media, you should be very concerned.
Yeah.
So, again, like I said, we have more distractions and more excuses than our parents did. So, I guess that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. But, I think it's...
Once you get away from the... When you get them off all that stuff, and all they look forward to is being outside and stuff, you have happier, more exciting kids. They're healthier. You know, because usually what goes with sitting on the tablet is eating a bunch of crap. So, you know, they're outside, they're playing, they're burning off that energy. They go to bed earlier. They sense of pride from doing their chores and stuff. And you know, the same rule still applies, man. Half-ass work, you're going to be there all day. Do it right the first time. So it's just going back, and you can't be their buddy. You know, you got to be a parent. They're going to make friends.
Yeah.
So, again, it's not an easy job. There's a reason why people sacrifice so much. There's a reason why, you know, mom aged a lot faster, because you are giving up a lot to raise these little versions of yourself.
You know, it's important to remember that parent outranks buddy, like light years outranks buddy in the important factor. And when people try to be the friend, they give up the upper hand, the biological upper hand that exists, and you can't do it.
No, it just doesn't work out. So again, but here's the thing: when you're closer with your kids because you do more activities and stuff together, and you get a stronger bond. You get a stronger sense of what's going on. You don't have to like, what's going on? I don't understand. I don't get. You know, like it's just. But you, even when you do it all right, you're still going to do it wrong.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'm like, again, I'm not sitting on no mountain pointing nobody. I'm telling this is what I see works. This is what I see when I meet a lot of people. I interview a lot of people. I see a lot of things, travel the world. And when it comes to kids, the parents that aren't, when you see at the airport, a whole family together, and everybody's on their phone with headphones on, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, I agree. Tyrus, we love talking to you about all the things. Thanks for being with us today. We look forward to catching up with you again next week.
All right. You guys have a good week.
Yep. You too. Have a good Labor Day weekend. Tyrus, regular on Gutfeld, Fox News contributor, and his book, Nuff Said. Go check it out. We're going to take a quick break. Let's talk about this poll when we come back here internally in our room. Do you know anyone who may switch parties when voting for president? Yes or no? Got some responses from you folks, and I'll read a couple here. Scott said, switching to Republican most for the very first time. That's a yes. Joe said, I know people who aren't voting Democrat this time. Not sure if they were registered. And Kevin said, I personally know three people who have always voted Democrat and have told me that they are going to vote Republican. What about you? Let us know. We'll be right back.
All of you, you are leaders. By the very fact that you all are here in this room, doing what you do at this incredible school, doing it as one big team, understanding all of the different parts that fit together to create a team.
You know what she sounds like? This is fresh in my mind. Do you know who Kamala Harris sounds like? Is this a band that she's talking to? Like a high school marching band?
Yes.
She sounds like Miss Lippy.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Harris.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where she's talking about the puppy. And the puppy that lost its way.
Popped his puppy paws.
You gotta get your black out there and find a job.
Billy Madison's real mad at the kid for giving up so easily and trying to find the puppy.
Yeah.
Doesn't that, I mean, that cadence is one of, I mean, that's a first grade class. I think that, I think Miss Lippy teaches first grade. Isn't Miss Lippy the first class he goes to? I'm pretty sure it is. It's the one where he eats glue.
Yeah. I can't remember if it's kindergarten or first grade, Mrs. Lippy.
It starts in first grade.
It does?
His
okay.
His first class is first grade. Okay. I just watched Billy Madison.
Well, then, yeah.
With
then
my son.
Because she's the first one.
I said, I think I told the story in the air, right? We watched Gladiator.
Mm. Yeah.
With my son. R-rated movie. Gladiator is 100% rated R because of the gore. I mean, they're gladiators. They're fighting in the Colosseum, and they show it in a way that looks real. Gladiator 2 is coming out. And it's coming out in November, and Denzel Washington is in it. Have you heard stuff about this movie?
I know that it's there. I don't know anything about it.
I've heard people suggest that maybe this is Denzel Washington's next Oscar.
Oh.
And then I also saw a headline that said that they weren't sure it was going to live up to the Ridley Scott. Wow. I have no patience and time for wanting Gladiator 2 to fail. Like, if
yeah, why would you want it to fail?
I would just... I'm not a critic. I'm not smart enough to be a critic. I don't have enough time to be a critic about it. It doesn't have to be. I mean, I just want something to distract me for 2 hours.
Totally. Although going into Gladiator 2, my expectations are not super high. So it would distract me because I would not.
I think expectations could be pretty high, though. Do you like the original?
I don't dislike it. It's not my favorite genre of movie, but it was a good movie.
It would be considered, this is the only way that I really enjoy the word or appreciate the word epic.
Yes, that's an epic.
Yes.
Very much. A time period piece involving world events.
Your soft serve ice cream cone is not epic. It's just not.
It's just big.
It's just ice cream.
Look, there's 4 scoops though. Epic.
But it's an epic, and it's a pretty great one. I'd be looking forward to it.
Ben-Hur is an epic.
Sure.
Yeah, these are epic. Like, there used to be more epic movies than there are now.
We watched Billy Madison afterwards just to kind of curtail the brute force of Gladiator. When I was going through Gladiator, though, I was the whole movie of Gladiator is about a coup. It's so hard for me to not watch these movies and be like, that's just like the Democrats. My kids are like, Mom, stop. Stop.
Plus, two things. Then after you watch Gladiator, then you're like, let's get a palate cleanser. And you get to the dodgeball scene. Brutal.
Life lesson.
Mm-hmm.
That one kid smacks Adam Sandler in the face, Billy Madison in the face with that ball, and then he gets what's coming.
Yeah. This is just like Gladiator.
If you don't want to get smoked, then don't pick on the big kid and tell him O'Doyle rules.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Gladiator, though.
Well, you had to also
there's an old man who's in charge of the kingdom, and then Joaquin Phoenix, whose name escapes me. Commodus, I think, is his dad.
I do yes. not remember.
Joaquin Phoenix comes in and finds out, you're not gonna inherit this kingdom. I'm going to pick Russell Crowe. And so he kills his dad, suffocates him, and then he tells everyone that he's the new emperor. So he just takes over. It was a coup.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need the warrior guy who was completely, like, they sent people to kill Russell Crowe. And then Russell Crowe does his Russell Crowe stuff, and he escapes. He goes back, and they've burned his home. They've destroyed everything that they can get their hands on to Russell Crowe. And he gets captured and he gets taken back to Rome where he's like, okay, fine, I'll fight. And he fights to the death because they can't stop, because the guy who steals the kingdom can't stop, realizes that while he's the king and he's the person who has the emperor, whatever, he's the one who has all the power. For some reason, everybody all of a sudden loves the gladiator and it's super annoying to him. Like, it really bothers him. He really doesn't like it. And then, what's Russell Crowe's name? Maximus.
Maximus.
I don't know if there's more. He doesn't, I don't know.
Oh.
So Maximus entertains the crowd. And that's what his like Sherpa guy tells him, like, you got to win the crowd. And then at the end, right when it comes to the very end, they go and Joaquin Phoenix stabs him in the back before he fights him. So they're not even fighting fair in the end. And he still wins. But But then he dies.
I like the ending. Well, not that part.
No, but before he dies, he says, give Rome back to its people. And I'm like, yes! Something yes.
Wait a minute. Now, in Gladiator 2, Russell Crowe, is he not? Is he dead? Is he back in the movie?
No, Russell Crowe is toast in Gladiator 1.
So he's
not. It's about not maybe his son, but maybe his son, the young boy,
okay,
who also comes to love Maximus, but is Joaquin Phoenix's sister's boy, who would be heir to the throne.
Ah, okay. So I thought I saw Russell Crowe doing interviews about it, but maybe he was just doing interviews.
No, it was Denzel Washington. Same hair. Get him confused.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So Denzel Washington's playing Maximus.
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. You had to be really disappointed, though, after getting the politics out, because I can see the parallels.
There's a lot of them, especially once you start wanting to see them, then everything is...
Then you can find them.
Yeah.
Then you turn on Billy Madison, and there's Kamala Harris teaching first grade. Gosh, that's sad.
Doing that weird dance thing when they're supposed to be out. And she's like, Billy, dodgeball time is important for Miss Lippy, too.
Have you ever noticed...
She's wearing a noodle necklace around her neck.
Yeah. It's a special time for Miss Lippy, too. Have you ever noticed that all the adults in Adam Sandler movies are typically very, very weird?
Oh, yes.
And all the kids are usually pretty normal?
Yeah. Well, this is something that has also humored me specifically this week. Bradley Whitford.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Who is the sniveling villain.
Here we go.
In Billy Madison, which is funny because he's like the corporate a-hole guy or whatever.
He's just polishing that sign, that thing's butt cheeks.
And what?
There's a scene where he's listening. They're preparing for their debate, their final epic battle at the end.
I rented the movie. I did skip through a few parts. Like
so
the,
there's
like
a montage.
The Chris Farley studying part.
There's a montage where they're preparing for their battle.
Mm-hmm.
And Bradley Whitford is listening to something, I think, in French, and he's just polishing the butt cheeks of a statue.
No, I don't remember that. I might have skipped over that. But Bradley Whitford has recently been out, I think he's trashing Trump. And it made me chuckle out loud because the headline was West Wing Star. And I'm like, dude, that sucks. That was in the 90s. Like, it has been a minute, Mr. 1990s television star. Big show, watched the show maybe 15 years later and loved it and would go back and watch it again and enjoy it. And I loved his character in that. But I'm like, this man is politically relevant because 30 years ago he was on a TV show about normal politicians.
Yeah. He might be left of Keith Olbermann.
Yes. He's nuts.
That guy is way out there.
I think he feels qualified. Because he was on a TV show, though.
Yeah.
Like, he does put himself out there in a way that is, you know, like, people are like, is it Jed Bartlett? Is it Jed Bartlett?
Oh, the name of the character?
The president.
You're asking the wrong
guy. Pretty sure it's Jed. It's definitely Bartlett. But that's Martin Sheen. Is he the old one?
Yeah.
Is he the patriarch?
Yeah.
I loved watching him as a president. And you could tell that he was a moderate leftist. And then every once in a while, they would really try to position something so that it would be really palatable for all the moderates. And it's like, this is a really leftist policy. You're just saying it in nicer ways.
Sounds about right. That's why I didn't watch that show.
But, I mean, if you went back and it's a great show. It's a great show. And, I mean, I'm pretty good on my politics. So I could stomach it. The show, everything about it, I like.
You're like right of center, right?
Just... you know, depends.
So we would have like, so we would have kind of a similar reaction to that.
I don't think I'm similar to you.
No, okay, never mind. Not going to watch the show then.
I'm just very amused. We played the Ben Stiller. Did you hear the Ben Stiller clip from the beginning of the show? He says nothing.
Yeah, he didn't say anything.
He delivers nothing, but he's like, it's time for a change. And I'm like, that was the script from the last time.
It's time for, I know.
You're reading the wrong lines.
It's so hard to hear it and not just go... Ah, come on! Like, if you were listening at that time and you yelled at the radio, I also yelled at my radio.
Like, do you need... Well, who was out there going, God, I don't know, man. What's Ben Stiller think about this? It's like, nobody. Literally nobody. I just think that the... Anytime you know that a celebrity, somebody who is a public figure... if you get an idea about their politics, they will tell you if they're on the left. If you can't identify anything about them that has ever been the, as I like to refer to, Office Space 15 pieces of flair virtue signaling that you are required to do should you be on the left and make sure that everybody knows about it so they leave you alone. My assumption is you're probably a libertarian fiscal conservative.
Yeah.
And everything else you don't care about.
Right.
But you, when you're in that private space and you get the opportunity to vote, and you're talking about your Taxachusetts, Bill Belichick, why it's harder to get people to play for the New England Patriots because they got to pay all these taxes that you don't have to pay at all when you're in Florida, Tennessee, Nevada. I think that there's a lot more people out there that are probably voting Republican because they understand the implications now more than ever of what Kamala Harris will bring in. When we come back, I'm going to play this clip of her, one of her campaign surrogates. I think he's on CNBC maybe. And he's talking about the unrealized tax and unrealized gains. Is that what, am I saying that?
Yes.
Right?
And, yes.
And he's like, he definitely proposes it like he's going to say it. And everyone's going to be like, yeah, man, that's the stuff. And they're like, you're nuts. I'll play it for you when you come back. I will tell you right now, I do know people who are switching parties this time around and are willing to vote for Trump for the first time ever. And the weird thing is, they tell me. I don't ask anybody who you're going to vote for. We need to know what you think. Go to the Andy Fry YouTube channel and let us know. Are you a yes or no on this? If you know anybody, Brad and Ryan, you guys can react to that and we'll watch the Kamala surrogate try to stumble his way through pitching unrealized gains taxes to folks in this country. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. So we were talking about the Kamala Harris campaign has not really been too heavily on record with policies, but they have thrown some out there. And it's funny that they picked what I would hope to be are the most communist leaning ones, because I don't want to see the other ones. If they weren't like, let's just put out the worst ones real quick and then we'll just like ease into it.
Yeah, like these are the good ones.
This is like the Ryan Wiggins set the bar really low. And then every week that goes by going into the election, we'll just be a little bit less communist and people will be like, well, they're not that bad.
Right, like on November 4th, they're going to be like 100% tax on any income above 60,000.
Something. And we'll all be like, well,
you kind of eased into that.
It could be worse. So they had a surrogate, a campaign surrogate on CNBC to talk about what we've heard a lot about, these taxing of unrealized gains.
Oh, unrealized gains, taxing unrealized gains just doesn't seem fair in any sense of the word. In the very best sense, if you are taxing unrealized gains, all you're doing is pulling forward the taxes that would be paid later when someone actually sells the stock.
I think that this reaction to unrealized gains is a little funny, given that I bet that the majority of people watching right now are already paying a tax on unrealized gains. It's called a property tax. When the value
property
of your home goes up, when the value of your home goes up, you pay higher taxes, even if you don't sell your home.
Your value of your home never moves the way
the
stock moves, the way something
else
moves.
That's always the go-to answer.
It's also, property tax is a use tax. You're paying for school, for the schools. You're paying for emergency services. Those are.
I'm going to interrupt because it's a good thing these two individuals can't reach him right now.
I know.
They kind of want to look. They look like they want to knock some sense into him, and he just is. He said the talking point. He got it in there.
They knew it. They knew it ahead of time.
He's like the other guy on CNBC goes, oh, property tax.
Here we go.
Things that make absolute sense.
And all the revenue that comes in from these unrealized gains taxes and the other.
Okay, if you can't see this, but I want you guys to explain this. When I see the CNBC female anchor talking, I imagine that if I'm having an argument with my husband and I'm pretty sure he's really wrong about something, that my face looks like her face right now. Have you ever seen your wife talk to you like this and you're like, man, I might feel like I'm right, but she definitely doesn't agree with me right
now. No, at this point, I leave the room. I don't do what this guy's doing.
He's like, oh, but let me tell you about, this isn't bad. We're already doing this to people.
Yeah, right.
Taxes and the tax in the Harris plan are going to go to what creating what she calls more opportunity. It's to make sure that...
what she calls more opportunity. Like, we know you not, might not like it, but we just want you to know that we've polished this... to be, it's opportunity. We're going to go with opportunity.
Every newborn born in this country gets
$6,000. Using the services.
Well, look, you're arguing that this is some sort of foreign concept that's completely unknown in the U.S. tax code. And it's
probably unconstitutional. It's probably, and it was never in anyone's intent to tax.
It's not an income tax.
And it's never going to happen, probably.
Kyle Harris to do an interview on CNBC. Look at this guy. Look at this guy in the middle. He's just sitting there going, well, I tried.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? They didn't really give me much to work with, and I feel pretty good about what I've done today.
I wish you'd just be honest. I wish you would just come say, listen, we're interested in getting our hands on every single dollar of the American people we can, because we think that as big government Democrats, that we can create a lifestyle that is more equitable for everybody involved. And yes, that means that some people are going to have to lose out on a lot, but that's the end game. The end game here is equal outcome, not equal opportunity, equal outcome. And we will be looking into your stocks, your trades, whatever is all out there that exists. In unrealized gains, and these two on CNBC are like, man, screw you. Like, don't even come over here and tell us about your stupid property tax parallel, because it's tired, old. And then he goes, it's probably, he's like, the male anchor is just talking under about how disgusted he is with him.
He's not even addressing the questions at the guy.
No.
He's like, look, I know what you're going to say. Let me talk to the camera here for a second. That's probably unconstitutional. The other really funny thing is there are so few policies out there that, again, when they put an actual one that you can talk through,
it ain't good.
This is what it is. Their pitch to America is, we want the government to take more of your money, and it's just like those really popular property taxes you're paying right now. You love those, don't you? This will be like that.
And Joe Kernan has been like not having it for quite some time now.
Is that the male on there?
Yeah, that's the guy. I've come across clip after clip of him just being like, no, you can't do that. Here's why that doesn't work.
Yeah,
here's what's going to happen.
This is a full stop. He's like a knock it off guy.
Yeah.
Which I like.
CNBC is not right leaning. They just happen to also be business.
Money and business.
Yes.
Is also not left leaning.
Yes. Like, numbers are not.
Yeah. I wanted to play this other clip for you. And this is Nicole Shanahan. This is RFK Jr.'s running mate in some states, Wisconsin and Michigan. And she's talking about the transition out of, you know, full throttle trying to win the presidency into MAGA.
You know, the best part of joining forces with Trump has been seeing MAGA, which I'm learning so much about. I was completely misinformed about what MAGA is. I don't know if you've taken any deep dives into MAGA world, but I was just under the impression that they were gun-toting radicals who wanted to come to my doorstep and rip my liberal family out of my house.
Now, we have a couple of those.
What?
But she's talking about what the outside looking in perspective of MAGA is. And is that not it? But the idea that the red hat is the new white hood?
I mean, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
That is what has been depicted out there, because again, you're supposed to feel something really powerful when Trump is invoked, and the red hat is supposed to make people feel afraid. And she's talking about having been in direct opposition to Donald Trump, actually on a ticket that is running against Donald Trump, has a very invested interest in Donald Trump not winning the presidency. She had a viewpoint of MAGA, and now that she's on this side of it, it's a little different.
I don't know, do horrible things to liberals, and that's how MAGA has been sold to a huge portion of America by the mainstream media. And I have to say that what I have learned about MAGA is that they're actually their own party. They're their own grassroots organization that chose Donald Trump. They have so much power in deciding where to point their energy and support. And there are really, really smart, thoughtful, intellectual people within MAGA. I've received beautifully written notes from MAGA supporters, and they were, you know, our base didn't know how to engage with MAGA. Our base was not, you know, MAGA oriented in the sense of even knowing who and what MAGA was and what their infrastructure was.
So listening to Nicole Shanahan here talking about having moved off of the main race to try to become president, vice president in here. Now she's talking about being kind of folded in with the endorsement of Donald Trump and his campaign, saying they're trying to like come together. And it's like jaw dropping for her. And it's amazing because the way she explains it, she's like, they're really nice people. And she's shocked. And it's a tragedy, but also it's important that she's out here in this case on Part of the Problem with Dave Smith's podcast, explaining what her newfound own perspective understanding of what MAGA in this country actually is.
In many ways, it's an online viral movement. And right. So the coming together of, and they gave us the name MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. Have you seen?
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we didn't come up with that. We're getting hats made, but the coming together of these two groups over the last week hasn't even been a full week yet, but watching that happen has been really glorious, because that was always the vision of this unity movement, this desire to heal the divide. And even though these are just two pockets within a much larger group of the American demographic, they're two very powerful pockets. And to find common ground has been one of the most motivating, optimistic things I've seen.
I think this is so cool coming from her to be willing to come out and say this and to really pull the curtain back on her own experience. Every single time somebody is exposed in a real tangible way to, you know, yes, you can call it MAGA, but just people who are generally Trump supporters, maybe they have a hat, maybe they have a flag, maybe they just don't have a hate has no home here sign in their yard.
Yeah.
And that's how you know. But for Nicole Shanahan to come out and start talking about the strength of this movement and the kindness and their willingness to like embrace them, that is, again, going to what I said and have said multiple times, what Donald Trump needs to beat in this election is not Kamala Harris. It's not the Democrats. It's the image that they've painted for him. And this, I think, is a powerful endorsement of shattering everything that she certainly thought about this whole movement, and probably Donald Trump. I think that that has legs.
That right there is exactly why Democrats are so concerned about losing RFK. That is why there was such a massive yelling match after the endorsement on Friday and over the weekend, because they're afraid of that very thing happening.
Well, I want more of it.
I like it.
I want to see more of it. I want to hear more of it. And we're going to share more of it with you as it continues to roll in. And, you know, she makes a good point. Today's Thursday. This all started happening on Friday. There's a lot more to come in not a whole lot of time. 68 days until the election season begins officially in, I think, less than 10 days. Voting starts in some places. Time to get motivated. Time to take action. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. There's a bell that still echoes the price that it costs to. About the Kamala Harris campaign has not really been too heavily on record with policies, but they have thrown some out there. And it's funny that they picked what I would hope to be are the most communist leaning ones, because I don't want to see the other ones. If these aren't, if they weren't like, let's just put out the worst ones real quick and then we'll just like ease into it.
Yeah, like these are the good ones.
This is like the Ryan Wiggins set the bar really low. And then every week that goes by going into the election, we'll just be a little bit less communist. And people will be like, well, they're not that bad.
Right, like on November 4th, they're going to be like 100% tax on any income above $60,000.
Something. And we'll all be like, well.
You kind of ease into that.
It could be worse. So they had a surrogate, a campaign surrogate on CNBC to talk about what we've heard a lot about, these taxing of unrealized gains.
Oh, unrealized gains, taxing unrealized gains just doesn't seem fair in any sense of the word. In the very best sense, if you are taxing unrealized gains, all you're doing is pulling forward the taxes that would be paid later when someone actually sells the stock.
I think that this reaction to unrealized gains is a little funny, given that I bet that the majority of people watching right now are already paying a tax on unrealized gains. It's called a property tax. When the value of your home goes up, you pay higher taxes, even if you don't sell your home.
Your value of your home never moves the way the stock moves, the way something else moves.
That's always the go-to answer.
It's also, property tax is a use tax. You're paying for school, for the schools. You're paying for emergency services.
I'm going to interrupt because it's a good thing these two individuals can't reach him right now.
I know.
They kind of want to look. They look like they want to knock some sense into him, and he just is. He said the talking point. He got it in there.
They knew it. They knew it ahead of time.
He's like the other guy on CNBC goes, oh, property tax.
Here we go.
Things that make absolute sense.
And all the revenue that comes in from these unrealized gains taxes and the other.
Okay, if you can't see this, but I want you guys to explain this. When I see the CNBC female anchor talking, I imagine that if I'm having an argument with my husband and I'm pretty sure he's really wrong about something, that my face looks like her face right now. Have you ever seen your wife talk to you like this and you're like, man, I might feel like I'm right, but she definitely doesn't agree with me right now.
No, at this point, I leave the room. I don't do what this guy's doing.
He's like, oh, but let me tell you about, this isn't bad. We're already doing this to people.
Yeah, right.
Taxes and the tax in the Harris plan are going to go to creating what she calls more opportunity. It's to make sure that
what she calls more opportunity. Like, we know you might not like it, but we just want you to know that we've polished this to be it's opportunity. We're going to go with
it's
opportunity.
Every newborn born in this country gets
$6,000 using the services.
Well, look, you're arguing that this is some sort of foreign concept that's completely unknown.
Well, it's probably
in the U.S. tax code.
It's probably
not
unconstitutional. It's probably, and it was never in anyone's intent to
tax. It's not income. It's not an income tax.
And it's never going to happen, probably.
Can we get Kamala Harris to do an interview on CNBC? Look at this guy. Look at this guy in the middle. He's just sitting there going, well, I tried.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? They didn't really give me much to work with, and I feel pretty good about what I've done today.
I wish you'd just be honest. I wish you would just come say, listen, we're interested in getting our hands on every single dollar of the American people we can, because we think that as big government Democrats, that we can create a lifestyle that is more equitable for everybody involved. And yes, that means that some people are going to have to lose out on a lot, but that's the end game. The end game here is equal outcome, not equal opportunity, equal outcome. And we will be looking into your stocks, your trades, whatever is all out there that exists. In unrealized gains, and these two on CNBC are like, oh, screw you. Like, don't even come over here and tell us about your stupid property tax parallel, because it's tired old. And then he goes, it's probably, he's like, the male anchor is just talking under about how disgusted he is with him.
He's not even addressing the questions at the guy.
No.
He's like, look, I know what you're going to say. Let me talk to the camera here for a second. That's probably unconstitutional. The other really funny thing is there are so few policies out there that, again, when they put an actual one that you can talk through,
it ain't good.
This is what it is. Their pitch to America is, we want the government to take more of your money, and it's just like those really popular property taxes you're paying right now. You love those, don't you? This will be like that.
And Joe Kernan has been like not having it for quite some time now.
Is that the male on there?
Yeah, that's the guy. I've come across clip after clip of him just being like, no, you can't do that. Here's why that doesn't work.
Yeah,
here's what's going to happen.
This is a full stop. He's like a knock it off guy.
Yeah.
Which I like.
CNBC is not right leaning. They just happen to also be business.
Money and business.
Yes.
Is also not left leaning.
Yes. Like, numbers are not.
Yeah. I wanted to play this other clip for you. And this is Nicole Shanahan. This is RFK Jr.'s running mate in some states, Wisconsin and Michigan. And she's talking about the transition out of, you know, full throttle trying to win the presidency into MAGA.
You know, actually, the best part of joining forces with Trump has been seeing MAGA, which I'm learning so much about. I was completely misinformed about what MAGA is. I don't know if you've taken any deep dives into MAGA world, but I was just under the impression that they were gun-toting radicals who wanted to come to my doorstep and rip my liberal family out of my house.
Now, we have a couple of those.
What?
But she's talking about what the outside looking in perspective of MAGA is. And is that not it? But the idea that the red hat is the new white hood?
I mean, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
That is what has been depicted out there, because again, you're supposed to feel something really powerful when Trump is invoked, and the red hat is supposed to make people feel afraid. And she's talking about having been in direct opposition to Donald Trump, actually on a ticket that is running against Donald Trump, has a very invested interest in Donald Trump not winning the presidency. She had a viewpoint of MAGA, and now that she's on this side of it, it's a little different.
I don't know, do horrible things to liberals, and that's how MAGA has been sold to a huge portion of America by the mainstream media. And I have to say that what I have learned about MAGA is that they're actually their own party. They're their own grassroots organization that chose Donald Trump. They have so much power in deciding where to point their energy and support, and there are really, really smart, thoughtful, intellectual people within MAGA. I've received beautifully written notes from MAGA supporters, and they were, you know, our base didn't know how to engage with MAGA. Our base was not, you know, MAGA oriented in the sense of even knowing who and what MAGA was and what their infrastructure was.
So listening to Nicole Shanahan here talking about having moved off of the main race to try to become president, vice president in here. Now she's talking about being kind of folded in with the endorsement of Donald Trump and his campaign, saying they're trying to like come together. And it's like jaw dropping for her. And it's amazing because the way she explains it, she's like, they're really nice people. And she's shocked. And it's a tragedy, but also it's important that she's out here in this case on Part of the Problem with Dave Smith's podcast, explaining what her newfound own perspective understanding of what MAGA in this country actually is.
In many ways, it's an online viral movement. And right. So the coming together of, and they gave us the name MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. Have you seen?
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we didn't come up with that. We're getting hats made. But the coming together of these two groups over the last week hasn't even been a full week yet. But watching that happen has been really glorious, because that was always the vision of this unity movement, this desire to heal the divide. And even though these are just two pockets within a much larger group of the American demographic, they're two very powerful pockets. And to find common ground has been one of the most motivating, optimistic things I've seen.
I think this is so cool coming from her, to be willing to come out and say this and to really pull the curtain back on her own experience. Every single time somebody is exposed in a real, tangible way to, you know, yes, you can call it MAGA, but just people who are generally Trump supporters, maybe they have a hat, maybe they have a flag, maybe they just don't have a hate has no home here sign in their yard.
Yeah.
And that's how you know. But for Nicole Shanahan to come out and start talking about the strength of this movement and the kindness and their willingness to like embrace them, that is, again, going to what I said and have said multiple times, what Donald Trump needs to beat in this election is not Kamala Harris. It's not the Democrats. It's the image that they've painted for him. And this, I think, is a powerful endorsement of shattering everything that she certainly thought about this whole movement and probably Donald Trump. I think that that has legs.
That right there is exactly why Democrats are so concerned about losing RFK. That is why there was such a massive yelling match after the endorsement on Friday and over the weekend, because they're afraid of that very thing happening.
Well, I want more of it.
I like it.
I want to see more of it. I want to hear more of it. And we're going to share more of it with you as it continues to roll in. And, you know, she makes a good point. Today is Thursday. This all started happening on Friday. There's a lot more to come in not a whole lot of time. 68 days until the election season begins officially in, I think, less than 10 days. Voting starts in some places. Time to get motivated. Time to take action. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. There's a bell that still echoes the price that it costs to.